It's Patricia Karpus, host of Untangle, the award-winning podcast that covers topics like optimizing brain health, finding your purpose, how to sleep better, harnessing the power of anxiety, successfully changing habits, finding more happiness and joy, and overall, all the many ways to live your best life. If you enjoy hearing from thought leaders, neuroscientists, psychologists, nutritionists, business leaders, and more, join us wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, everyone, welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. My name is Dwayne Osterlin, and I'm your host, and we are on to another episode. So today, our guest is David Greer, and he's going to talk about his own recovery journey, and specifically from his perspective of being a successful entrepreneur and high-functioning individual, where he himself had difficulty recognizing that alcohol was actually an issue for him, and how others, because of his success and his ability to be high functioning, didn't even believe that he had a problem when asking for help. So he talks about his moment of clarity out sailing on the Mediterranean under the stars, and how something hit him and he realized this was a real issue for him. Really enjoyed talking with David about his story and his genuineness and his authenticity, and am really happy that he has decided to share his story and, in a way, as he says in the interview, break his confidentiality from the 12th step to help others. So I appreciate that he decided to come on and share his story. So I hope you enjoy it as well. And let's go ahead and start this episode. All right, everybody. Welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. My guest today is David Greer, and he is going to talk about recovery, and specifically about recovery with super high performers, entrepreneurs, people who are highly driven. David, please introduce yourself.
Hi, Dwayne. Thanks for having me on today. I'm David Greer. I'm in recovery for over 12 years now. But, you know, I remember it's literally one day at a time. I can't get very far away from remembering that I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a 40-plus year entrepreneur. And for the last 6 years, I've been a business coach and a facilitator of strategic planning. So I work exclusively with entrepreneurs. And the last year, I decided to break my anonymity to come out publicly. I mean, I had a little bit on and off, but much more vocally that, you know, I'm in recovery and I'm really focused. I've focused on entrepreneurs who are running successful businesses, like not startup entrepreneurs, but entrepreneurs who actually have running successful businesses and want to move it to the next level. And then I decided I'm going to sub-specialize on entrepreneurs who are struggling with alcohol or addiction, whether they're still active or whether just their recovery and how do I run a business and be in recovery.
And it all kind of comes together, because I don't think we can separate these things from our life. I mean, they're all part of it.
They are. Although most entrepreneurs hire me for business problems or because they're in a crisis. And, you know, they're like, we don't have to talk about personal issues. And I said, no, we don't. We'll only talk about things that you want to talk about.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, of course it's going to stay there. You can't.
Yeah, right. And so within 3 months, we'll be talking about some aspect of their life that doesn't involve business.
Awesome. So first, I want to start off by getting to know you and knowing a little bit about your story and how this unfolded for you and being an entrepreneur and how it looked.
So sure. So I'll try and, like, you know, what it was like, how, what happened and what it's like now, just a little bit of my story, both kind of the business side and then the drinking side. So I got a degree in computer science. I joined a young software startup when I was still in fourth year at university. And I liked the place. I stayed 20 years and helped build it into a global powerhouse. And you know, when I was in university, I was more of a binge drinker. Before I got part-time work, I was on the rugby team. That's a good place to go drinking.
Definitely. Actually, I played rugby too, so I know that.
But I don't think I was quite an active alcoholic. I think there was probably a point there where it could have gone either way, but there wasn't anything to suggest I should not drink. I mean, I was adopted at birth. I grew up in a household with two parents who would have a daily drink. I do not believe they're alcoholics.
Right.
Right? It's just, part.
Some people could just do that. They're good.
You know, and maybe dad would have a second scotch and that's it. You know, and
right.
They could party and, you know, they definitely would have some serious parties with drinking. But I've really looked back at that in pretty hard, and I just don't see it as that they were alcoholics. But I did have modeled. See, the thing that I think is I saw modeled this normalization of daily drinking.
Right, right.
So there wasn't anything in my 20s to kind of stop. I wasn't a daily drinker in my early 20s. But again, it was all normalized. And then, you know, I'm super successful. I'm like 22 years old. I'm standing up on the San Jose convention floor giving my first technical paper to about 75 right. people, right? And then that night, like, go out to this big gala dinner and like everybody's just drinking wine. Like,
yeah.
I remember meeting a guy from Hungary and he just drank me under the table.
Right.
And, you know, I bring that up because I think in a lot of business, drinking is drinking is normalized in Canada and the US and Western Europe, period. But then right. in a business context, in many cases, I think it's even more normalized. Like it's the lubricant to close deals.
I would imagine, yeah. I mean, it's part of the culture. It's what you do. It's how you get things done when you're working with other people.
Yeah, you're trying to close a big sales deal like an enterprise sales, you know, and you fly down pre-COVID. You fly down to, you know, the customer city. You're out with the key players. You maybe have your technical support team with you. You know, I've talked to entrepreneurs, like going to the bar, having a couple drinks before dinner, having a bottle of wine each. Like, hey, that's situation that's normal.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, like, so there's five drinks in a bottle of wine and two drinks before. That's seven drinks in one setting and not having anything in between.
Yeah.
That's most medical people. You do that on a regular basis. That's alcohol use disorder.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah. When you're drinking that much and you don't even realize it because, you know, you're pouring glasses.
I've talked to entrepreneurs about this. Like I have one of my clients who on his own volition, like I had shared with him, I was an alcoholic and I was in recovery. And he said, you know, I flew down and we were talking about this deal and here's what everybody drank. What do you think? And I said, oh, well, this is what I think.
Right.
And he said, like, I felt weird just asking for glasses of water.
Yeah. So for you, you're going along, you're being successful, you're
going to these trade shows. I'm seeing very normalized drinking. And the progressive nature of the disease just keeps progressing. Like, when did I become a pickle instead of a right. cucumber? I can't tell you exactly. What I can tell you is when my wife got pregnant with our first child, I promised to quit drinking. And that promise lasted 24 hours.
Right, right.
So that was, she was born in July of 89. So that would have been like late fall of 88. So I was definitely an alcoholic by then.
Right. So you started to notice, like, well, also when someone says to you, hey, you got to, maybe you should slow down, you know, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to do that. And then you can't.
So I almost never got to that place. I was in denial for decades because I just had massive capacity to drink and not show a lot of adverse effects. My significant other still is not 100% convinced I'm an alcoholic because it's like, I'm not a brown paper bag and wear an overcoat. I'm not a truck driver. I'm not a stumble down drunk. I don't
right.
slur my words. I don't fight. Like for my significant other, this is like, you know, I didn't get drunk and belligerent and angry, which is, that's not my experience, right? That's not what happens to me. And so for her, if you don't have those attributes, you're not really an alcoholic.
right? You got to go really down over to that other side.
Yes.
And if you're not on that other side, then you don't have an issue. I think you bring up such an important point, because I think there's a lot of people in your situation that struggle. They know internally that this is not good for me and I can't stop it yet. But on the outside, they got it all together, so to speak, on the outside.
Right.
And, on the outside. And other people go, no, you don't have a problem. Get over it. You're overreacting. But you know, like, this is something that's a problem for me.
And I don't know if I knew for a long time. Like, I just did it. Like, and I didn't realize how much I was coping with stress, with, you know, so I'm 10 years into this business. And then one of the founders who originally hired me, she wanted to retire. I bought her out. That was massively stressful. I mean, I'm 34 years old, two kids. And, you know, I'm borrowing high six-figure amounts to buy this out. And it's got a bunch of payback. In that process, I left an accounting office on the 20th floor of a tower here in Vancouver, and I had tears in my eyes. I was crying outside the elevator. Wow. Like in a public, high-powered accounting organization, just over the stress and anxiety of taking this on. Now, it turns out that my former partner never would have executed some of the terms of the conditions, like if I missed a payment. She told me that like 10 years later.
but not at the time. Thanks.
Not at the time. And, you know, I made sure I banked a whole quarter's payment so that, you know, we could have a disastrous whole quarter. Actually, we could have a disastrous two or three quarters, and I still would be able to make payments. And you know, it turned out well, and I made a ton of money. So, right. So I bought it out, and now I'm partners with my former boss. I'm not having employee reviews. It's like I've arrived.
Right.
So like now I can drink more because I'm, you know,
because I've got it all. So I should,
because modern culture, like watch the Hollywood movies, right? Like when you've got it all, you have a drink. Like, isn't that what everybody does?
Yeah. But if you're using that alcohol to soothe yourself in some way, because you're in some kind of distress.
Yeah. But I didn't know
problems. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So that only lasted for like 20 years.
Yeah.
So daily drinking.
Only 20 years.
Yeah, only 20 years. So I get to 20 years. My former partner and I have a major disagreement about the future strategy of the company. We end up settling it by him buying me out. So I'm in my early 40s, and I'm now out of a business I've been in for 20 years. I got a really good check in my jeans. Not enough to last me for life, but enough to, you know.
Right, to be comfortable, probably.
Very comfortable. And someone smarter than me who I met in that transition said to me, hey, do you need to work right away? And I'm like, no, I'm not done, but I definitely don't need to work right away. And she said, you know, when she had a similar transition, she went off to Australia and bought a VW van and went traveling for a year. Right. And our kids at this point were 12, 10, and 6. And I can still picture sitting in her office, and I can see the light bulb going off over my head, just like it does in the comics.
Like, right.
Bing. Bing. And so my wife and I, we had lifetime sailors. So we commissioned a sailboat in the south of France, and we took our three kids and we homeschooled them for 2 years and sailed more than 5,000 miles in the Mediterranean.
Wow, how wonderful. Wow.
So, you know, a fairy tale story. I would like see the light, I would stop drinking, and, you know, everything would be better after. Well, it turns out the Med is a great place to go drinking.
Right.
Wine costs at least half or a third what it does in Canada. You know, there's seaside bars every place that you pull into, you know.
Right. And it sounds like on the outside, everything looks spectacular and you're not a fall down, drop down drunk. And so you're able to, you know, excuse the pun, sail through this without much problem. But yet something's going on internally, obviously, with you.
I think at that point, it was kind of more party. It's like, you know, I put in the 20 years and it's party time. And you know, and my wife likes wine too, so it was fine to have wine on the table every night. And she's not commenting on how much I'm drinking. And in fact, no one ever in all this time ever, even when I got sober, ever really commented on my drinking.
Right.
More of that's part of that super high capacity ability. And I'm not the kind of drunk that just drinks to blackout, right? It's more, I drink to that level of intoxication where I maintain that like through the whole evening.
Right. Like you keep it at that level to keep that kind of buzz going to even it out.
Not that out of control. Because after all, I'm the kind of guy who loves to control things. I mean, what otherwise, why be an entrepreneur?
Yeah.
Including myself. So I don't want to get to the total out of control falling down drunk stage. Like, then I'd be an alcoholic.
Right. But I need this buzz. So I'm going to find some happy medium.
Right. So a couple of things happened on the trip that were, I think, cracked the door just a tiny, tiny fraction. So we did more than 24 overnight passages in the Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to sail a boat at night. I mean, it can be challenging to sail a boat in the day, but at night, and there's a lot of freighter traffic in the Med, and just keeping your family safe. And what was interesting, you know, as I reflect back, was all of those nights, I never had a problem not drinking. And we did some that were like 2 day, 3 day, and I'm talking 24 hours a day.
Wow. Wow.
Right?
Right. You're on the boat, you got to keep the boat going, you got to keep it safe, and you got to be on constantly.
And normally, you know, I power up to anything big challenge with alcohol at that point in my life. But that one, it was like, no, I need to keep, I didn't even consciously think about it. I just knew I wouldn't pick up a drink because it was too serious. The life of my family depended on my being sober. So that was interesting. Hindsight, I didn't really pick up on it. A lot. I did a little bit at the time. And then our second overnight, we were in the Western Med Sea, and we were actually motor sailing because a big high pressure system had set up. But when a high pressure system sets up, it's perfectly clear. And we were probably 100 miles from anything. And my son and I came on watch at 2 a.m. And above us was the Milky Way just down to the horizon.
Wow.
And there were so many stars that we kept mistaking stars at the horizon for lights from boats.
Wow.
And it's unusual to have like light, the star light go that close to the horizon, right?
Right.
Especially because usually you've got some light source that's starting to impact it. And I think that was a moment when my higher power touched me, but I didn't know it. Like it was, like every time I share my 12-step recovery cakes, I mentioned that story because I really think it was the grace of something bigger was touching me. And that was like in 2002, and I didn't get sober until 2009, but I just think this was some of.
Right. It sounds like the awe in that moment of seeing that just took you out of yourself, and you were touched by whatever you want to call that force, the higher power.
Yeah, exactly.
It hit you.
And today, like when I'm not feeling that connected to something bigger than me, I just go back to that experience.
Right.
And I've shared that with my son a lot of times. And actually, it turns out my sharing it with him is really important to him.
Wow. That's awesome.
So, you know, we come back from this trip. I'm busy chasing deals, not having a lot of success. I'm doing early stage investing, and I'm working for options and doing board work. It's just not fulfilling. And I don't really realize how not fulfilling it is.
Right.
And then the universe put an extraordinary coach in my path in 2007. And I hired him on my 50th birthday. We did our first 8 hours together.
Wow. So like an intensive, like we're going to.
Yeah. I'm a classic entrepreneur. There's two modes. There's all in or out. Like,
yep.
there's no in between ever.
Yeah, I understand that.
So, you other high performers, you know whereof I speak. And it took 18 months, but on January 26, 2009, at 10:30 at night, I had my last drink, and I wrote an email to my coach with the topics, like some wins I'd been having and what I wanted to talk about the next day. And the topic was my drinking. And the next day, in our coaching session, which I remember was in the morning, I opened up. First time I'd opened up to myself, let alone another human being. Because I still I could give tons of examples of stupid, crazy things that, you know, I knew that I was an alcoholic, but I still, and notice I sent an email saying I had a drinking problem. You know, I wasn't prepared to use the A word.
Totally.
And he coached me to go to 12-step recovery.
Wow.
And that was a Tuesday. So he made me commit to go to a meeting before the end of the week, like by the end of Friday. So again, I'm all in or all out. So I go online that afternoon. I had a networking event that was on downtown until 8 o'clock. And I looked, and lo and behold, there is a meeting on literally as I drive on the street by it, like a quarter of a block off the main street I'm going to be driving by on my way home anyways.
Right.
So I went to that meeting. And that meeting happens to be in a legion. So legions are, were founded to support members of the armed service after, if they're in or after they're in the service, and it's a social place. And as you, and it's a bar. So I walk in
to the bar.
And the doors are open. Like I walk through the outside doors and the doors, there's an inner door to the bar and they're like open. And there's like two or three tables with beers on. And I remember like just a deer, just deer in the headlights. I'm just standing there. And a couple of people going to the meeting obviously recognize me for what I was. Uh-huh. And they said, oh, hey, look, if you're looking for the meeting, go down the hall and up the stairs. And I turned and I went down the hall, and it turned out later I found out there are actually 12 steps in the stairs.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it's really funny. And, I went upstairs to this big room. First meeting, there's probably 50, 60 people there. Of course, I hid out in the back, tried not to talk to anyone. Right. I certainly at the time wasn't willing to acknowledge how kind of afraid I was. And two young women, Frostine and Esme, I still remember them. They kind of came out of the front of the meeting and just talked to me.
Wow. So they kind of welcomed you in.
And, I'm like in my early 50s. They were probably in their 20s.
Wow.
Right. And they just welcomed me. And maybe probably other people talked to me, but just something about the two of them really stood out for me.
So in some ways you knew you were in some kind of pain. I mean, obviously you're seeking help, but kind of going back a little bit to what you were talking about, how if you're really a high performer and driven and stuff, and on some levels you have all this control, but it's all contained around this inner pain, if you want to call it. Obviously there was some kind of suffering there, and alcohol numbed that out for you. You didn't have to pay attention to it.
I don't like negative feelings.
Right. Well, yeah.
It's really simple. I mean, sometimes we try and complicate it so much, right? But the bottom line is I don't like negative feelings. So, and my three biggest fears are I'm not good enough.
Right.
And that's always present. And it's always present in business because it's like, am I going to lose customers? Am I going to it just really highlights the I'm not good enough fear. It's my fault. So that's my other fear, right? And who do you think you are? Who do you think you are to deserve a great life? Who do you think you are to, in my kind of codependency and looking after myself now, I just spent this weekend on our sailboat kind of by myself. And even there, like to just go do that and look after myself is still, there's some of that. Who do you think you are to deserve to have a weekend of just being by yourself and just looking after yourself and doing the things you know you need to do to look after yourself. So there's still some friction, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think, we can kind of start to understand those wounds that we have, but they always like to pop up and say, hello, here we are. And, as you're trying to take care of yourself, but I like what you're saying and pointing this out, that those beliefs and those feelings were there. But my guess is, like you said earlier, they weren't conscious till later. Maybe you got sober and
did a lot of work.
But so you're going along, but you don't know what's driving the bus, so to speak. You don't understand how that stuff is pushing you.
Yes. It Totally. And I did stand up at that meeting and say, I'm David, I'm an alcoholic, which I think was the breakthrough moment. And that meeting has been my home group for 12 and a half years.
Wow.
So, wow. You know, that's been just a really rock solid part of my sobriety. In the first couple of weeks, someone recommended to me a private men's step group. Mm-hmm. And I still do that every Monday at 6 o'clock. In fact, I'm looking forward to it tonight. And there's still some of the men that I met at that first meeting, again, probably 12 and a half years ago, are still part of the group, including my sponsor.
Right. So, wow. That's awesome. And to have those relationships.
Yes. And that particular group was like really super high powered lawyers, judges. So like we really, really have to protect anonymity, both what's shared and who's there with that group. But, you know, to have someone who I think is, you know, super high powered, like a judge, share emotionally, like, you know, we read a step, like, you know, step three. And then to hear what it means to another guy. And I remember the first time in those meetings when someone cried and how uncomfortable I was. Like I wanted to go over and comfort them and, you know, it's okay. And I think there's probably 17 of us that night. And every single person, like you could hear a pin drop.
Just listening.
Just holding space for the person to be in their emotion. And later, after a few more years of doing the steps and some therapy work, right, it was like, I realized I was super uncomfortable because I'm uncomfortable with crying because that wasn't allowed in the household that I grew up in.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And thank God for that modeling. That's why, you know, for me, 12-step recovery has been so powerful.
Yeah.
So anyway, so those have been some of the things that I have done in recovery. I also knew with Coach Kevin that he's the kind of, I knew that once I admitted it to him, he was going to keep me, he was going to hound me. Like right. He was not going to.
It's kind of like a part of your brain knew you needed this and another part was fighting it.
Exactly. But once I pressed send on the email, I knew the jig was up.
Right. Right.
I didn't know what was going to happen, but I knew the jig was up because I did trust Kevin. And I just knew he was never going to let me off the hook on this because that's right. The kind of person he is.
Right. And it's like that other part of you, or maybe that your best self or whatever you want to say, really was advocating for you in that moment and said, nope, we're pushing that button. We're pushing that send button and you're done. And then doing the work. I would love to talk a little bit about you working with high powered individuals, because I think your story is so relevant to that audience of people who are, you know, really they push to success. They look really good on the outside. They may have companies. They may be judges, like you were saying. And I think there's a certain personality with that, but there's also this undercurrent of hurt and pain that when you're with that is never expressed. Rarely.
Yes. Yes. So people ask me, like, what's the number one characteristic of entrepreneurs? And my response to that is persistence. They persist.
Persist. Yeah.
So the question is, so what kind of people persist? Like they persist beyond unreasonable odds.
Yeah.
Right. So as you said just a moment ago, they're driven people. Mm-hmm. So something in them really causes them to have this drive. And, you know, I would say in a lot of my work with entrepreneurs, that drive comes from a place, typically from our family of origin, when we really drill down into it, that isn't necessarily healthy.
Right.
Right. And that's not what they hire me, and I'm not a therapist, but like the self-care. So I got from Coach Kevin, in his book, Your Oxygen Mask First, he talks about, and I worked with him to develop this over a number of years, along with all of his other clients. So what we coach around is this idea that there's three parts to your life, and you need to figure out, so when you're setting goals for yourself, like for the year or the quarter, so there's your career / finances business, okay, is one piece. Then there's like your life, your relationships, your significant other, your family, you know, those things. And then in the middle is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And what most super high performing people do, they're super, super passionate in my experience. So they're passionate about their career, business, that part right. of it. They're passionate about their life and their family. And so it looks like this.
Shrink.
Where's you? Like, you're just squashed in the middle because it just, you don't make it a priority to look after yourself.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And so that's some of my coaching with people is, okay, so what's your goal for yourself? Like, what are you going to do that sustains you? Because the truth is, if you don't look after yourself, well, it's like recovery. If I don't stay sober and I go back out drinking, I'll be nothing to anyone.
Right. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And if we take it in the bigger context of, okay, maybe you don't use alcohol as a coping mechanism or drugs, but you still are squeezing yourself out. And eventually you'll burn out. You'll get sick.
Right.
You'll get depressed. Like, these things will show up because just humans can't do this. Right.
And if you're not taking care of yourself and you have no option, but to, I'm thinking you have no option to take care of your feelings that you don't want to feel anyway, you know, alcohol, it's great to like work too much, give everybody yes. else everything.
Exactly.
And then, you know, well, the only way I know how to handle it is, you know, food, drugs, alcohol, sex, whatever, whatever it is. And I'm like, I'm gone. I'm out of it.
Yes. So you find a lot of entrepreneurs are workaholics.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's a persona, like there's a whole myth that like to build a successful business, you have to be a workaholic. Like
right.
you do. Don't get me wrong. Like, you have to work crazy, crazy hard to be a successful entrepreneur. But it doesn't mean you can't. Like, even when I was drinking, even when I was building Robel, the software company I was with 20 years, I still spend at least 3 or 4 weeks sailing every year.
Wow.
Like, and I'd have other entrepreneurs like pride say, oh, I only take a week off a year.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, you're not clear on the concept here.
that's probably not really being able to practice that self-care to bring that balance to your life. But then I think like what you were saying earlier, before, I guess, having that internal exploration, you know, part of that is driven by these unconscious wounds.
Yes.
The drive to be, you know, I've got to be successful. I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy enough. I gotta show the world.
Like my fear. Who do I think I am?
Yeah.
Right? To like deserve self-care.
Right.
To deserve actually doing things that are just 100% for me. And maybe my spouse doesn't even agree with them.
Right.
Right? But
yeah.
That's her issue, not mine. Like, I know this is what works for sustaining, renewing, looking after me.
Right. And you need recovery to tune into yourself. Otherwise, you got to sit with that discomfort, like you said. I mean, you go into that meeting the first time and it's like, oh my gosh, wait, this is actually about me. I'm uncomfortable and I don't know how to sit with this. And this is awful.
So that's some of the coaching I do, whether the entrepreneurs are practicing alcoholics or addicts or in recovery or are just normal people but have other things that come up. You know, in the first year, they'll just spend 10% of their energy doing something that just looks after themselves. But
right.
compared to zero, that's like a big, like, I only go where clients lead me. Like, I meet each person exactly where they're at. Right.
Right.
And I just point out things to them.
Like,
right. is this really working for you to never go visit your sister or your mom by yourself? Even though you know that those are things that really sustain you and renew you and make you feel great about life in the world.
Yeah. And sometimes we need someone just to ask us that question to make us think about it because we're so on automatic pilot, moving, you know, and especially yep. when you've got high stakes on the line and you've got huge deals and huge things and employees that you got to make sure are taken care of. There's so much pressure. It's almost, you don't even have time to reflect on those questions or even ask those questions. And so when you sit with somebody who asks them, sometimes that can be just the light bulb.
Yeah. And then another kind of common entrepreneur arc, you know, if you started a business from scratch, you had to do every single thing. And then the business grows and it's successful. But, you know, you kind of got successful by controlling every aspect of it. And at some point that doesn't actually serve you. And you probably have control issues anyways, like even if you're not an alcoholic.
Right, right.
And so it's coaching people around letting go of that control and helping them to realize that if they really, like the most limiting factor in most businesses is the entrepreneur themselves.
Yeah.
Like the business can only grow to the extent they can grow as human beings.
Yeah.
Right? Which isn't why someone necessarily hires me. They hire me to solve a problem.
Right,
like,
right.
Like my first reports don't listen to me. Well, maybe they don't listen to you because you always jump in and try and solve the problem rather than just letting them do the stuff.
Right.
Like, what do you think?
Right.
How would you feel?
Right.
If someone said to you, would you look after this? And then you started looking after that. And then that person jumped in and took it over.
Right. And I would imagine when you're working with people, even on their business stuff, right, that you're asking these questions, this is going to, in a way, they're going to have to reflect on some of themselves to be able to even do some of the things that a yes. coach would have them do. So they're going to be in that situation where they're going to have to look at some of that, I don't know,
Yeah. So I will often ask, I have two young entrepreneurs. I just started coaching and they have very, you know, how they disciplined employees and kept consistent about it was very different. And so I asked them if they would do an assignment to reflect on conflict, like what it means to them.
Right.
Right. How it's resolved. And then I said, and I want you two to get together and I want you to compare notes.
Right.
Because yeah. I could tell even early in our work together that they just, and again, it's not like one is right as one is wrong. It's they have very, very different comfort levels. One is quite comfortable with conflict and one uh-huh. is not. The person who's not comfortable with conflict is not going to discipline employees as much.
Right.
Is not going to be able to hold the line because to do that, they're going to have to create conflict.
Yep. Yep. And if you don't like conflict, oh, yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah. And so I often, again, I never tell them because I'm a coach. I never tell them to do anything. I
right.
very often ask them, would you be willing to do this reflective assignment?
Right.
Right. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Which they can say no to. Right? They can always yeah. say, no, I don't want to do it. Okay. You're not ready for it. Fine. We'll try something else. It's not my place to judge, right? Just move on to my next.
Everybody has to find their way. I mean, even though,
yeah.
you know, I'm a therapist and I do therapy and I work with people in that capacity. It's everybody has to make that choice and they have to find their way and any kind of helping individual can do is here's options for you. Have you thought about this question? Have you thought about that? Have you, you know, maybe try this.
As I remind entrepreneurs, I only have the questions.
Yeah.
Like that's the difference between a coach and a consultant. A consultant has the answers. That's why you hire them. They're super expert in whatever area they're expert in.
Right.
You hire them to do something, do a project, have the answers. You don't hire me for that reason because I don't have the answers. All I have are the questions.
Right.
I have a lot of them and I have a lot of tools. Like I have reflective pieces. I have, you know, resentment pieces. You might be
right. Right.
Non-alcoholics have resentments too. And it yeah. doesn't often, and sometimes they carry them for years and years and years.
Yeah. Yeah. They may not be using alcohol or something yeah. to numb them yeah. out, but yeah, I mean, we're all human beings at the end of the day.
So I want to just circle back for a minute or so, a few minutes, just talk about kind of that early stage of my recovery, but back to entrepreneurs and now getting sober.
Sure. Yeah.
So like early in my sobriety, so I couldn't imagine not having wine at dinner. Like, you know, every one of us has that piece that we can't imagine. That was one of mine. And then, you know, the other one that was hard was networking events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and being around alcohol. So, you know, I coach people that just make sure you have a drink in your hand. No one will really ever ask you if you have a glass of water in your hand.
Right.
And if someone asks you why you're not drinking, well, first of all, it's none of their business.
Right. Yeah.
Really, it isn't. That's a personal choice. And just feel free to say, I've just decided that I'm going to lead a healthier life. And one of the things I decided is to take alcohol out of my life. So I'm drinking non-alcoholic beverages. And that I tell people, like in my early 50s, I made a choice that I wasn't going to have alcohol in my life. And that I was going to lead a healthier life. And, you know, that way I don't have to feel any compulsion to justify, defend, talk about my recovery or where I'm at. I just leave it at that. And if someone pushes it, it's like my experience is usually it's because they have some issue with alcohol, either from their family of origin, because they're an alcoholic. And so that's why they keep pushing it, because they're uncomfortable because you're not drinking with them.
Right. And I think that for people like early in recovery, those kind of social situations can be challenging to navigate because you're so used to a certain way of being that here is this new way. And how do you set those boundaries for yourself and practice self-care and maybe disappoint the other people, or you think disappoint, I mean, still their stuff, but you know, all those thoughts that go into your mind and the challenges. Yeah, definitely. Those are definitely challenges.
And then others are, did you build a drinking culture in your business?
Yeah.
Right? Because then, you know, you have to first look at how you're going to operate. You know, if you have if Friday beers for all the staff has always been the deal, you know, you need to go prepared to what you're going to say to people. And over the long term, you know, you may want to change your mind on that. Again, it's not something I would ever encourage an entrepreneur early in sobriety to worry about, but I would make sure that they're coached around what they want to say to their staff, what they want to be drinking, what they want to make sure is in the fridge for them.
And those are challenging situations. I mean, I think maybe someone who hasn't struggled with alcohol or a substance, it can seem like, well, you just say you don't want to drink. But for someone who has struggled with it, these are way bigger. They're
really
challenging situations. They're uncomfortable. How do I say this? So I'm glad you bring that up because I think that's so important to recognize as part of, you know, entrepreneurs working through that process.
Yeah, again, a networking event, or even again, the Friday beers, like someone says, oh, hey, I'll get you a drink.
Yeah.
Right. And again, what's your response? Like usually I just say, no, I'm okay. And when I'm ready for another one, I'll just go get it. Thanks. But thanks for the offer.
Yeah. And I would imagine if you have to deal with, you know, other high profile clients, and this is the way in which you knew how to do the social navigation and get the conversation flowing around business issues and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden now that's taken away. It's like, how am I going to be successful if I don't have this? You know, if I don't have this in my life, like maybe I can't do it. Maybe it won't work. Maybe I'll be a failure.
What will they think of? Yes, I'll be a failure. What will they think of me?
Yeah,
they'll think, and usually it's they'll think less of me.
Yeah,
like it's not even a question,
right?
It's a statement, right? And then coaching people around, you know, I do have a client of mine who hired me as a coach and then got sober very shortly after, who's in a super uber high performing sales with one of the top four tech companies in the world. And just coaching him around escape routes so that when you go into a social situation, whether it's personal or professional, and there's going to be drinking involved, if suddenly you're triggered and suddenly you got cravings to drink or you're really bothered, like how are you going to step away? How are you going to escape from it?
Yeah.
And really coaching in social situations to have the discussion with your spouse beforehand. So it's not a shock to them.
Yeah.
When suddenly you just disappear, but rather it's like the two of you should have a code word.
And this is a question I have. Like, I would imagine as an entrepreneur, if you can take that energy and then put it into your recovery in a way, you know, because entrepreneurs are problem solvers, they're thinkers, they're doers, they go for it, and they take on these huge challenges. I'm just wondering, can that energy be transferred over into their recovery process and into that process?
Well, let's see. I've only done the steps the AA way 8 times. I've done it.
Right. Okay. There you go.
The ACA yellow book once, and I've done the ACA laundry list once in 12 years so far.
Right. Right.
But, so, you know, but I'm a slacker.
A slacker. Yeah. Right. Exactly. So use that energy.
Do you mean like that?
Yeah, exactly. Being able to take that and do that. So one more question. You also have a book out there that you've written, Wind in Your Sails, right? And yeah. I'd love to just have you comment about that. And I know that's written for entrepreneurs.
Yeah. So that one doesn't make any mention of recovery because I wasn't, was in recovery at the time, but I wasn't prepared to talk about it. But that distills my, you know, at the time, 30, 35 years of entrepreneurial experience. And I think there's only kind of 10 sections of a business you need to think about. Or 10 aspects of your business. So that's the 10 chapters, which is why the subtitle is Vital Strategies That to Accelerate Your Entrepreneurial Growth. So those are the 10 strategies. But I'm a real practical nuts and bolts guy. So I want to give you enough theory that it's like you can understand the concept and then a whole bunch of tools to go apply it. And so that's what happens in each chapter. And then I end every chapter with a case study by an entrepreneur who I think is particularly good in that area. So my friend Murray Goldberg, I think, is a brilliant on product strategy. And so he's featured at the end of the chapter on product.
Right, right.
Right. And so, and they're typically 1,800 to 2,200 words each. So when we look, a third of the book is other people's stories. So it's not just like my collected wisdom put into the book, but also that and another 40 plus people that I interviewed as part of the book. So again, just a lot of nuts and bolts, hard won experience. I intended it to be a reference that you can keep on the shelf. And it's like when you're really stuck, just pull it down. I put a lot of work in the index, look in the index and go read the 2 or 3 pages that apply.
Awesome.
Right. To what you're doing right now. And I recorded the audio version 2 years, maybe 3 years ago now. 2 years. And that caused me to reread the book in its entirety. And there was only one small paragraph that I felt was dated. Like these are overreaching concepts that have been around in business for a long time. And even you can apply to high tech, to medium tech, low tech, because I think the concepts are more about people, process, and how to think about your business. So that's Wind in Your Sails.
Awesome. So as we kind of wrap up here, there's a question I always like to ask every guest when they come on, is if someone out there is listening, maybe they are that entrepreneur, that high achiever who's struggling, what would you want to say to them? If you could say one thing, what would it be?
You don't have to do it alone.
I love it.
That's what I would say. You don't have to do it alone. And, you know, I'm happy to have a 1-hour coaching call with any entrepreneur, no charge. So like if you're really stuck on an issue, just visit my website. My email and phone number is on every single page.
And what's your website? Throw it out there so people can.
Yeah, it's coachdjgreer.com. So it's my full name is David James. So it's just my initials, coachdjgreer.com.
Awesome. And I will link all that in the show notes. David, thank you so much for coming on to the Addicted Mind podcast. I appreciate your story. I relate a lot to it. So thank you. And thanks for all that you're doing.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation today.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Addicted Mind podcast. As usual, all the links will be in the show notes at theaddictedmind.com. So check that out. And if you're enjoying the Addicted Mind podcast, please share it with a friend or write a review in iTunes. It really does help get the podcast a lot of exposure and helps people find it. And I really appreciate it. And think about joining our Facebook group. You just go to Facebook, type in the Addicted Mind podcast, click join, and continue the conversation online. All right, everyone, Have a wonderful day, and I will talk to you on the next episode.
Oh, hey, it's Erin.
And I'm Michaela, and we're the hosts of the Two Sober Girls podcast, and we are on a mission to spill the wild truth about sobriety.
Forget the rosé all day cliche. Sobriety is flipping amazing.
Absolutely. It's not just about quitting the drink. It's a gift you give yourself and your loved ones.
So what are you waiting for? Break up with that old toxic relationship with alcohol and let us show you the possibilities.
And here's the thing. Everything your precious heart desires becomes way easier without the influence of alcohol.
We're not just two sober girls. We're also wellness coaches. We're here to show you how to optimize health, lifestyle, and beauty, feel sexy and alive as F.
So stay tuned because we're rolling out new episodes every Monday wherever you get your podcasts. And trust us, they have your name written all over them. We can't wait to share the magic of sobriety and wellness with you. Subscribe to Two Sober Girls podcast today and come follow us on Instagram for behind the scenes action and send us a DM. We can't wait to meet you.